All right, everyone, welcome back to the Something About Soccer podcast. It is episode 8, and we are joined today by our normal co-hosts here, myself, Dill40K, Bizarre Brigade.
What's going on, everybody?
And Pixelated Suits.
Hello, y'all.
You know, we tend to talk about, well, depends who you ask, the sadness, the joy of each of our own teams in the intro, but we're going to shake it up a little bit. Maybe shake up isn't the best word. Biz is going to spin it up a little bit. You know, we wanted to maybe talk about a few different things in the intro just to kind of, you know, do things a little bit differently. So, Biz, you want to kind of talk to people about what we're going to be doing at the start of the episodes for a little bit now?
Yeah, I think our whole goal with the podcast across the board is, you know, we've said since episode one, I don't think we fancy ourselves experts by any means. I think the charm of this podcast is what we're really trying to exemplify and go for is the fact that I feel like there's kind of a staggered amount of knowledge kind of throughout the host. And I think that's kind of what we're hoping appeals to a large range of the audience with, you know, where there is going to be like kind of the learning as we go, but then also you'll maybe be able to kind of pick something up based on your own personal knowledge. But I think for us and some of the brainstorming we've had, it kind of inspired me to maybe sit back and kind of think of like what would be the best way to go about reformatting some of the ideas that we do and not sitting on our laurels, not just sticking with the same old format where it starts to get a little monotonous. So we're going to be, you know what, we're going to be adventurous today and we're going to do something called Wheel of Topics. I have created just a random spinning wheel. If anyone ever watches my Twitch channel too, by the way, you know how much I love the wheel spins. It's like all we ever do whenever I'm like coming up with some kind of random prompt or idea.
You're a just chatting channel, right? And you just spin. That's all you do. You just spin it over and over.
Yeah, sponsored by the gambling sites
and by we just Big Spin.
Just Big Spin. Yeah, bigspinwheel.com. So if you ever head over to the Bizarre Twitch channel, that you can find that there. But pretty much it gave me the idea, though, why not just implement that here to a degree with some of our prompts and also just kind of make it a little more well-rounded. I think like allowing our personalities to shine through a little bit more with not just all soccer all the time. I think that's something too that I know all of us obviously have lives outside of the pod. We're not just sitting and, you know, watching CONCACAF across the board at all times. Well, I might be, but maybe not. Maybe not these two.
We've been outed as fake psychos. That's sad. Or sickos. I don't even know. That's how little I am. I am a sicko. It's sad to say.
I've been telling people that behind your back for pretty much as long as I've known you, so Jesus. It checks out. But I've already spun the wheel, and Dill, just kind of thinking about as we go to maybe it's something too that I can even send you, and we could have it pulled up on. We've talked about doing like some interactive with the YouTube channel too, so maybe
I would like proof of the topics that are being spun.
I'm just writing the prompts. There is no wheel. It's an illusion. But the first one that I did spin, so we're gonna spin it. We'll see. We're going to start with one and see where we go and just kind of go from here. This, you guys are seeing the trial run. This is the beta test of Wheel of Topics.
Pre-alpha.
Yep, exactly. So in real time. So we'll keep it simple. We're keeping it light to start. But the first topic is, what is the latest movie? And this is for everybody. Latest movie you have watched and what is your grade of that movie? It can be that's the latest thing you've seen. So it's not your favorite thing you've seen. It's the most recent thing. That's shitty B movie on Hallmark. You got to disclose and you got to say what you think about it. So
you want to go first? Dill, picks or, oh, okay.
Dill or picks. I'll let you. You guys decide. I'll go first. All right.
Oh, you're gonna make me go first. Yep. You're gonna put me on the spot for the pre-alpha. I feel like the announcer at Comic-Con who has like nothing to say because he's never been on stage and it's just fumbling it so hard. Well, not even part of the
genre that he likes. He's just like, I'm just here for the paycheck, man.
Well, we were joking before. I was like, what are these topics going to be? Is Biz going to load it with super political and polarizing things? And the first one's a movie. And funnily enough, the latest movie I watched, it left me a little feeling weird after it. It was a bit political, and that was that new Alex Garland warfare movie. Finally got to see that in screen. Okay. You know, I was going to say jokingly, but you know, the movie was so intense to first of all, I saw it in IMAX And we, you know, I kind of got the tickets late, so we were pretty close. So my neck was cranked a little bit on the big screen. Yeah,
I felt full, like the full tilt back.
Yeah, exactly. You know, when you're like a test, when you, I don't know if who did this. I feel like we all are of the age of doing that. Like when you're testing games out at Walmart and you're like, you know, remember that? And you're looking up like that. That's how they get you to stop playing.
Encased in the glass box, exactly. Both the controller and the, where yes. You're like trying to like play with the buttons between mm-hmm. the little glass.
Exactly. But yeah, Warfare by Alex Garland and the other direct. It was co-directed by a veteran of the war. It's kind of disrespectful not to know his name, but I'm sorry about that. I felt very conflicted about it. I gave it on Letterboxd a 3.5 out of 5. I love Letterboxd. Okay. This is a shameless plug. I try to get everyone on it. But technically, the movie was incredible. Incredible sound design. As an action movie, it felt so good. I heard on a podcast someone related it felt like more of a horror movie in terms of the tension and the pacing, and I really loved it for that. And as an action movie, you know, when everything gets kicked off, it's very, very good. It's cut really well. You care about the characters despite not knowing a ton about them, because it kind of just throws you into the thick of things. But
I like that.
I felt very conflicted because obviously it was about the Iraq War post 9/11. I think it takes place in 2006, so the first invasion of Iraq during that time. Or are they in Iraq or Afghanistan? I can't remember. Just fact check me, whoever. But the thing is like, I've had this conversation so many times with people. I really enjoyed war movies when I was younger because, you know, I kind of just saw the action of it and the heroics of it, and I was like, oh, this is so cool, you know. You know, as a kid, you don't really understand the context of everything. But as I've gotten older, I've kind of been more disillusioned with war movies, and I don't know if I enjoy them as much. And especially any war movies that are kind of post-World War II, where it feels like some of the conflicts may not be, you know, as black and white as maybe World War I and World War II. And I'm not to say that isn't black and white, but our involvement was a little bit different. So watching Warfare, a war that, you know, was supposed to be about one thing, turned into a completely different thing. Why are we over there? I think what the movie really conveyed was it was like a day in the life of a soldier on a mission and what could go wrong in that. And it doesn't really take a political stance. You know, it starts with, you know, the shots of the locals, and it ends with shots of the locals. So it definitely takes a stance in that way. But it just kind of shows you how brutal war is, how scary it is. This is what these people go through, and it doesn't really have anything to say about it outside of you just taking it in and then you having your own, you know, take on it afterwards. So I was conflicted. I like the movie from a movie point of view, but I feel like as a story, it's hard to, I don't know, it's very polarized even for me. Like, I like it, but I also don't like it because of the subject matter. And you know, I never want to watch a war movie where the things are glamorized. I want to see, you know, I feel like every war movie should be anti-war, but at the same time, it's hard to make a war movie that's truly anti-war because there's always going to be some sort of heroics involved, whether it's a person, you know, doing something to try and save one of their comrades, you know, selflessness. It's very hard. Exactly. It's very hard. Yeah. So
it needs to be entertaining story appeal to it. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, I thought I'd start off the pod very light with that review and, you know, just keep it really chill. So yeah, 3.5 for Warfare. I'm going to look up the co-director's name because I'm starting to feel bad now that I forgot his name. And, you know, it's interesting because it's like, Ray Mendoza.
His account of the story too, right? You said, Okay, now that you say that too, I do remember that.
It's based on the memories of a certain mission that happened. Yeah. When does it take place? 2006, the Battle of Ramadi in Iraq. So I was right. I wasn't wrong. Okay.
Nice. You should doubt yourself, Dale.
I'm just trying to humble myself. So, you know, if I do get it wrong,
movie comprehension. Look at this guy. Yeah. Well done.
Well, yeah. Picks. What you got, huh?
Yeah, I watched a crazy movie, so I've been on a kick.
Mine is so just like gross compared to both yours, but this is why we do it.
This is just gonna throw out B movie.
Yeah.
No, mine was just trash. That's why. But go ahead.
Yeah, so I watched a movie by Werner Herzog, and it's his second movie. I'm pretty sure, maybe
Look at us.
It's one of his.
You guys know this question was coming? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, like, prepared.
We're so
yeah,
prepared.
I actually wrote up I made a small 7-paragraph write up about my thoughts on the film on Letterboxd.
Well, I'm always logging my movies on Letterboxd.
There we go. Me and Pink's got that go. You got to join us, Biz, on Letterboxd.
I have one. I just don't use it. Don. I really should. I got to get on it.
We should get sponsored by
it's
Letterboxd.
It's like his kid. He's got a burner Letterboxd because he's rating his DMs too highly. He thinks he can judge him.
Yeah, I've been banned from Letterboxd from the creators. They're like, what is this? No. Trash tags.
Flagged for too many indecent reviews. We could just imagine all the different things that Biz is writing. So anyway, so yeah, I watched this movie called Fitzcarraldo, and it was really interesting because the central theme is about an immigrant. I'm pretty sure he's an Irish immigrant to the Americas, specifically to Peru. And he falls in love with opera, and he's always been a huge opera fan. So one of the big things that he wants to do is bring the opera and kind of, you know, have that like civilizing mission towards Latin America and bring the opera to Peru. And in doing so, he has to, you know, cross an entire, he has to get through the Amazon. And a lot of, you know, the movie itself is him going through the Amazon. It's a 3-hour movie. So it's like, I still have 15 minutes to go. So, you know, I'm kind of cheating a little bit. I didn't finish it all the way.
Review.
Incomplete. Yeah. Do we need to come back to you? This is an incomplete review. This is completely disregarding the whole prompt of the idea.
Be silent. I can't
remember the other
as
one.
You watch the well,
no, that works. I mean, you've watched a majority of it. So, I mean, based on what you've seen, pending like some crazy like twist ending, would you recommend that?
Yeah.
What did you use for a scale, Dill? Did you say out of 5? It was 3.5 out of 5?
Yeah, I was actually going by the official Letterboxd scale. So.
Okay. Oh, my fault. As someone that doesn't use it much.
And you can only go in 0.5s. There's no like 3.33s, which.
Which is great. I think that's really good.
That's, I mean, why are people doing that in the first place?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't like that. But
it's kind of insane behavior, to be honest.
No, yeah. I actually gave this movie a 5, though. Well, I don't think I've logged it yet, but I think I'm going to give it a 5 just because.
A 5 with 15 minutes to go is bold.
That's crazy. What if all the characters die? Like
it'll be worth it because I've already seen like the 2 hours and 45 minutes building up to it. So it's like, even if the last 15 is bad, you know, the rest is worth it.
Yeah.
All right.
I came for the opera.
So if Fitzcarraldo, I'm spelling it out because I had to do a Google search just to see. But Fitzcarraldo, FitzCarraldo, all one word, 1982, venture drama from Werner Herzog. So there you go.
Yeah.
I could just read to you the last paragraph of the Wikipedia plot. I'm sure that's the last 15 minutes.
You can't spoil it. All right. So that brings me to my review, which I – oh God. All right. Compared to these two cinephiles, the trash that I just watched on Netflix. I watched that new, while I was editing, I had it on and I watched that new Electric State movie with Millie Bobby Brown. I was curious. I had heard really terrible reviews about it. I thought the concept itself was actually kind of interesting.
It's a great sci-fi concept.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, the concept is really cool. But like, and from whatever, you know, your classic, like everyone who read the book is like, they've massacred my boy. What have they done? What have they done? And it sounds like, you know, once reading the reviews after the fact with everything that happened, like, it really sounded like a lot of people were in agreement that like they just went so far from the source material that it's like, this is, it shouldn't even be called Electric State. Like, what are we even doing? So take that with a grain. If you've ever read that book and you're like on the fence about maybe giving it, I would assume most that have are probably already said like, no chance in hell I'm watching that. But just in case you're thinking about it, yeah, you probably don't need to. I would give that, I mean, I can do a 0.5. I would give that just like a 1 out of 5, like just flat out. Like, it's just the fact that it's a Russo, it is a Russo, movie. So it's your classic, like, you know, big budget, tons of CGI. It's just CGI garbage. It's pretty much like end of the day. I don't know enough about the source material either. So like some of the creative choices, like, I don't know why Chris Pratt's rocking a mullet for half the movie, like this weird, like blonde mullet. So I don't know. Maybe that's what the character looks like in the book. I have no idea. But
what's
I don't know.
Tolkien.
But yeah, having like, and then like Mr. Peanut was like a centralized character for the whole plot, which like, what is that? What is this movie? Like, so it was one of those where I just kind of like finished it via hate watch about like, I don't even know, about 30 to 45 minutes in. I am also a sucker like, you'll learn this about me too if we do more of these movies, like in the opening prompt. I will watch action movies no matter how terrible they are. I think they're really fun. And I like having them on, like, when I'm doing stuff a lot of times too, if they're not very good. So, then just kind of sitting there. I think I get that from my dad, where it's just kind of like observing the plot of a horrible movie and then just kind of like laughing about it after the fact. I don't know. But that always brings me joy and amusement. But yeah, it doesn't mean it makes it any better than what it was. It was really tough. And it, for anyone that like follows what the Russo's trajectory in the movie business has been like, it's I feel like it's been a couple, it's been some pretty serious clunkers outside of Marvel. So yeah, it's, and for what I've read about the Russo's too, is pretty much if like they have the whole script and structure handed to them, it seems to be they hit it out of the park. And it's like, if they have creative freedom, then it's like destroyed. So, which is sounds like that's kind of what has happened with the last.
That's couple. A tough description of your career. That's yeah. Like, that's being, oh, how's your new boyfriend? Oh, he's nice.
Stays within the lines. Doesn't do anything too crazy. He won't surprise you.
Limited physically. That, you know, it'd
what? Tens across the board in FM terms. If we're talking Football Manager, if we want to get back to soccer for it, there you go.
Nah, we don't need to get back to soccer. We're in a good spot right here. One thing that is sad though about movies like this, especially when they're big budget and they're with these type of properties, it's like you're not really gonna see. Like, when's the next swing on, like, on TV or as a movie for this sci-fi premise, like, this property? Like, if you mess it up once, it could be cooked for, like, 50 years. And, like, all the like Big Electric State fandom, Big Electric State is pissed. Their rendition of, like, it on screen is cooked, and they're not going to see it again. Like, that, imagine if that happened with Lord of the Rings. Like, if all the, like, that can easily happen, and it's really sad when it gets messed up, because obviously you know how people are when they make it off really popular properties. They are protective of that. We've seen it with, you know, but currently like Last of Us. So
you never know too though. I mean, like property like that, I think what you're saying is definitely true in like there will never be in my lifetime probably a movie attempt at that again. I would assume, but doesn't mean that, like, I feel like TV always takes random stabs at stuff every now and again, even if it's had like a prior poor like rendition of it already made. We've seen that a couple different times where it's like, I mean, really good example was like, it doesn't necessarily mean it's good or bad across the board, but the one that just instantly popped in my head was like the Lemony Snicket movie that was made into a Netflix series, kind of like similar circumstance where it was like, that's a book series. They took a swing on it. The movie itself, I think, was actually like okay received, if I remember. I don't think it was like trashed by any means, but kind of something in the similar vein of that, where it's like, it's something that was already in a box office. I think that probably was what, like 10 years, 5 to 10 years. So it's like, I would assume something similar to that with like how good of a story that is that you could see something like that. But no, I definitely agree with you. I think movies, that thing's cooked. You're not getting a movie of that ever again. It's not happening.
Well, that was solid. Three.
Okay.
A little of everything.
So what do we think? You know, rating right now for that. We like it. We like the idea.
On a scale, on the Letterboxd scale, I'll give that a... It feels, you know, we're in pre-alpha. It's like I haven't finished the last 15 minutes, so I'll give it a 4.5.
Okay, all right.
I like it, though. I like it.
Working model. It's a working model. If we have time, I have one more, and this one actually works because it's a little bit of a shorter prompt. I have some, like, kind of would you rather prompts and stuff like that, too.
I want to see a quick hitter.
So I got a quick hitter. This one is, what would bug you more or what would gross you out more based on how you look at it? So this is like a kind of like in-person society hygiene type of thing. So people chewing with their mouth open, or people taking food from your plate after you're finished with your food. So not like while you're, but after you're finished without asking though. So like people just like grabbing fries, like some kind of psychopath of your plate. Which one of those would bug you or freak you out or gross you out more? If you're like sitting there and it's like just somebody you just met, or like, you know, even, I don't know, friend doing it. Picks. What would freak you out more?
Your lead off on this one.
Yeah, I'm wrestling with the thought. I don't know.
I thought they were pretty equal.
I feel like it's obvious answer.
Okay, right. Well then you go if you have one. I'm curious.
No, it's okay. I'll go. Picks go.
Yeah. I'll save it for Dill because I put him on the spot last. I would probably go with chew with open food, because if I'm already done with my food, then, you know, whatever, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, so that's just
okay. So. It just, you know, I don't mind sharing. If they were, I was probably going to say yes anyway. I think it is a little bit weird not to ask, but I think that, you know, in the societal way of just chewing with your mouth open, it's a little bit worse. Because if the food's going to get thrown out anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Says more about us if we get upset as they take the food off, because is that how little you think of the person eating with you? You won't let them eat off your plate? Come on, man. As long as you're going to take my food that I didn't offer you, just chew with your mouth closed. That's all I ask. Yeah.
That's my rule. If someone's doing both, that's tough. Yeah, it's just tough scenes.
Biz, are you coming the opposite way of this, or are you?
When I wrote it up, I tried to think of one that like I've ever experienced in my life that have like kind of rubbed me the wrong way. I would definitely lean in the same camp. Like when you're out in public and somebody is like, whether it is like an acquaintance or somebody that, you know, like I remember we had some kids back in like elementary school that would like really like do the hardcore chomp. Which you'd be like, what are you, a shark? Like, calm down, bro. Like, what is happening? Full on like unhinging his jaw like a python and just like smacking that thing back up. And
the glob.
Oh my God. You're going back to elementary school. That's a core memory. That's
seared in my brain. That's how bad one of them was. I remember it. I won't dox the kid. I actually remember his name too. It was bad. It was really bad.
Jerry the Clopper.
Yeah. Name stuck with him throughout all of high school. Just chocked. Had to move two towns over.
All right. Well, I know what to avoid when we all eventually eat together.
Yeah.
But I will steal food off your plate, even while you are still enjoying your meal.
See, you two are allowed. It's fine.
That's how close we are. All right. I like that. The wheel has been spun, and I think, you know. Yeah, I give that a great. That's a 4.5 out of 5 on the Letterboxd
rating. Okay. Right.
That's going to be joining us.
I was a fan.
I'm not going to say the rest of this journey, but I think for the foreseeable future.
All right,
adding stuff to that wheel.
We'll keep throwing stuff at the wall, see what sticks.
That's how we do it. All right, so maybe we should talk a little MLS now.
Why not?
Well, we're actually going to talk about Champions League first, but let's get into the main part of the show, MLS Weeks 10 and 11, and everything else that kind of surrounded it. We got some CONCACAF Champions League, some contender or pretender, coaches hot seat, and will Biz see Messi? Find out in just one moment.
The main topic is what you came for!
All right, let's get into the meat and potatoes of the episode, chewing with our mouth closed, of course. First thing that we're starting off with is a super hot Canadian team, both in the league and in Champions League. The Vancouver Supercaps, who wrote that, bounced Messi and friends out of the CONCACAF Champions League and are going to be playing Cruz Azul in the next round, correct?
In the final.
Yep. Your boy Meyer going to stop them from winning? What do you think?
Dude, he's got to.
He's got to. Wow. Okay. Anti
anti-MLS.
Anti-MLS. All right. So the question we are posing, I would love to hear it in the comments as well. Are the Whitecaps currently having the most remarkable season in MLS history? Wow, Biz. Those are some major words to say. As our local MLS historian, the man who saw it when it was, you know, during the silent age, during the black and white age, and now in full color.
The Minnesota United comment when we were taping.
I don't know what you're talking about. How are the Vancouver Whitecaps kind of, what is this team, does this team remind you of any other team that you've seen in the past? How does this rank up? Because you're the one who wrote this bit. So, yeah. You know, if me or Pix wrote it, it'd be like, dude, you guys are tripping. But maybe you know something we don't.
Well, I mean, we can map it out and we can even do the math to kind of make it make sense too. So there's 34 regular season games that are going to take place throughout the season. So we're pretty much like a third of the way through, roughly, if we're actually looking at it through. So I know it does go quick, right? So 26 points in totality times three with an extra game in hand. So I don't know, tack on maybe an extra point there, here and there, but so they're running on a pretty much like a 78 point to 80 point pace right now. The most in MLS history was last season with what Inter Miami just did in regular season with 74. Inter Miami did not play a lot of Champions League last year. If I remember correctly, I think they got bounced pretty quickly. Like having seen them play in person now with the depth that they have, Jaden Nelson, Emmanuel Sabi coming off the bench, that is something that to me is such an incredible luxury. And I think it's something that you see MLS teams position themselves in really good spots over time with like how their roster builds kind of slowly compound and build over time with like making the right moves and getting some designated players off the books or high TAM players. You start to move those out and start to develop within or sign some high upside guys that pan out instantaneously. I feel like this Vancouver roster is panning out maybe like a year or two sooner than I think even like probably the sporting director would have expected in my own opinion, just based on how much they're hitting and sticking with like some of these rotational pieces they brought in. I mean, some of these guys are playing up to the point where it's like, they're going to leave because they're going to be asking for bigger contracts. Like it's already happening. And I think the most important thing to lay out is the fact that they're doing this without Ryan Gold. They've elevated Sebastian Burhalter to like a point where they're saying that he deserves U.S. men's national team call-ins, a guy that was like such a afterthought through like after being kind of a highly touted prospect in like the early portions of his career. So they've just revitalized a lot of careers. They've had a couple South Americans in Cubas, and I mean, Pedro Vite is being tabbed as potentially being the MVP of the league right now. It is unbelievable what that midfield is going to look like when Gold comes back. And then not to mention that Brian White is just eating goals through all these players and being the beneficiary where he's just always in the right spot. He's just your perfect talisman to have up at the front. So for me, I think like all of that and doing this with beating Inter Miami, who was the best MLS points per game team of all time last year as part of your Champions League run. You also beat multiple Mexican league teams now, all with pedigree, including Monterrey, who's I think as of right now the second highest spending team in North America. It's like what they've done and how they've done it is the thing that makes me kind of like trot out the question. And being on that pace and still doing it whilst being in Champions League is incredible. In my time watching, I've never seen anything like it. And that's why I'm curious with what you guys think, if you've watched them yourselves or taken time to watch them, kind of like what your own perception of it is for it. Because to me, somebody that's watched, I've never seen a team that looks like that. It's something else.
Yeah, I definitely agree with what you're saying, Biz. And one of the big things about that too is like, you know, I used to watch Brian White all the time as he was a former Red Bulls player. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, comparing the Brian White that we see in even this year's Vancouver jersey, comparing with all the other times that he's been there, it's just such a different player. And it's just like, they're just such a different breath of fresh air. And Vancouver was a team that I was watching marginally just because last year, you know, I was watching them a little bit with Ocampo, but he wasn't really playing too much. So I think that their gamble on having those players on, like Ocampo was brought in, I think maybe a year and a half ago or so. And he wasn't getting many minutes, but the fact that they brought that player in so that they can, you know, start phasing him in that second year, if he's good enough, we'll start playing him and rotating him in more. Third year, you know, is this guy going to be an MLS starter, or is this guy a guy that we're going to sell on for more? So through the lens of Ocampo, I've been able to see Vancouver really develop and gain a lot more confidence, especially with Ocampo's role, because this guy's a right wing back. So you could really see the less reliance, you know, where Vancouver were relying a lot more on him being a defensive minded right wing back, you know, where they had to defend more, but now they have the liberty to attack more in a sense. And I think that you know, creativity that Vancouver has had, you could also see it through its back line and it building up towards, you know, playing out and then, you know, going through the midfield of Burhalter and, you know, eventually Gold when he comes back. So it's going to be really interesting. But I think one of the questions that does have to be raised, and I think that they're going to be fine, but I think, what does Vancouver look like without White? Because I think that besides White being, you know, a great player, I think that he also brings really good mentality of he's been a player who's always had that, you know, potential, but he's never been, you know, one of the best of the best. You know, he's never been like the top 10 players of the MLS. So I think that all that pressure, he's been able to cope with it. But once you take him out of the team, and once maybe if he gets an injury or if he gets sidelined for whatever reason, especially with all the games that they're playing, which will, you know, obviously tail off once the CONCACAF Champions is up, it just, you know, it's a question of what would the Vancouver Whitecaps look like without Brian White. So what do you guys think about that?
Well, he is injured until early June, according to FotMob right now. I remember he got injured during that Inter Miami game and then missed the Real Salt Lake game. So
Well, they've done it before too. Yeah. Daniel Rios is, he stood in, and I remember like the games that I've actually watched too with, I think it was the game against Pumas, if I remember right. Like, I think one of the commentators had mentioned, like, I mean, Daniel, I can't remember who said it, but it was somebody had mentioned, like, you're not moving on when you're starting Daniel Rios up top. And like, it was one of those things where it's just like, Vancouver has just defied every single like color commentator pushing back and like giving criticism based on like using squad rotation. People literally thought that they were just punting the series against Pumas with how they started. Like, what starting 11 was trotted out in that first home game against Pumas? Everyone was, like, Vancouver's not taking this seriously. Mm-hmm. Like, are they just trying for the regular season and trying to, like, rotate? And then they end up, I think they tied that game still with a rotated side and then went down to Pumas and either did the same or I think they won on away goals on that. But regardless, I mean, just what they've managed to accomplish with all these different things thrown at them, Sam Adekugbe being hurt, Ryan Gold being hurt, Brian White being hurt. Like, they keep just having people fill in, and like the level of play doesn't drop off. I don't understand like how that is possible in MLS with how much MLS that I've watched and just what some of these rosters bottom out to. It's like a lot of teams have depth, but like having it in as many positions as they seem to have, where it's like they are too deep at every single position that I can like that I have seen on the field, like outside of maybe their center backs, but it's like those guys are just playing every game.
Yeah.
Like, so, I mean, it's unbelievable, but yeah, the Rios thing, he has to answer your question, Picks. They have proven it. They've done it. So we'll see in a longer form, I guess. Question mark.
I'm excited to see. I think that the team is super dynamic and it's going to be really interesting to see if they're able to continue it for as long as they've been able to have it for, you know, we're at 1/3. Let's see if they can do it into 2/3.
Yeah, top of the table, you know, in the entire competition. And we talked about it, you know, a bit before. I think the thing that I kind of take from it is that their attack is just so incredibly deep. It feels like you guys said, they don't miss a beat when they, you know, substitute players on. And, you know, I was really happy to see Emmanuel Sabi was just such a great pickup for them. And, you know, like you said, Biz, teams are deep to an extent in the MLS, but it's definitely a drop off when you get some of those subs in there.
Yep.
It feels like with Vancouver's starting lineup and, you know, their backup attacking options, I feel like it's so plug and play. And the fact that it's not as if like it's one or two games since this happened, they have already been doing this without Ryan Gold, who's one of their most key pieces. And Brian White's kind of stepped in to be the key piece that feels like, you know, what Ryan Gold was doing last season. Obviously, you know, a little bit different profile of a player. But, you know, whoever they put in up top is, you know, contributing really, really well. And it's really exciting to see. So I would love for them to win the Champions League, you know, take down Kevin Meyer and Cruz Azul, your Colombian keeper. I don't know. Would you rather see Vancouver win, Picks? Or, you know, because there's a Colombian on either side that you like. So
there is. Yeah, there is a Colombian on the other side. I would give it a little bit more to Kevin. Okay. I like Kevin a little bit more.
Okay.
Listen, you guys are rooting for Canadians, so I don't want to hear it.
Well, I'm doing I'm deep in the Canadian game right now. So
that's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
Dill's got
no excuse for being
right.
Yeah. Even though you're right next to it.
I'm definitely team. I think when it comes down to it, I definitely am team MLS. I like with us starting this podcast too. I've started to, you know, obviously watch, I think, a little bit more CONCACAF in more unison. Like, I know Liga MX, we aren't going to talk about it super in depth, but Liga MX, the quarterfinals were starting tonight too. So it's like, that's something that, you know, with everything going on and with us in this, it's something that it's like, it's enhanced my desire to start paying attention to just kind of the more well-rounded product and not just, you know, the singular thing that my team's a part of, because I think that's important with like the Champions League being a thing and trying to prop that up and make that more popular. I think that's important to really understand all the different teams that are a part of it. But yeah, I just think across the board too, it would be something else to have a Canadian team be the champions of North America. I mean, that's really something I think for, you know, just Canada soccer, like the landscape itself, like what that means with like how that team has been run as of right now too. If Vancouver making this final, that now all three Canadian teams, granted, obviously with all the opportunity and the choices that they have with the Canadian championship, maybe it's a little bit of an easier road to get there, but all three teams throughout the history have made a Champions League final that are a part of MLS in Canada. So you've had Montreal has made it, Toronto FC has made it, and now Vancouver has made it. They were the last ones to not.
That's a really good fun
fact. that's something that is something too that is like, when you actually look at it, that is pretty incredible. Like when you're thinking about it too, based on, granted, one team is probably always going to get a berth based on just that Canadian championship with the level of play of what the CPL was up till this point. I feel like now it wouldn't shock people if a CPL team somehow figured out how to get in through it, but it's like up until the last couple of years, I feel like that was really like not the case. And I feel like the play in CPL has really picked up over these last couple of years, but it had always just been kind of like been an extra berth where it's like, you know, CPL teams wouldn't even really hold their breath that that third spot belonged to them. It would always just go to one of those three. So the fact that that has changed now and there's a changing of the guard, I think also helps grow that aspect of it. But it's a really cool thing to see that all three of those teams are capable, but Vancouver could be the first one to actually get to the pinnacle and actually win it. Yep. So that, and I really, out of all the opportunities and chances now over these last few years of what I've seen, Vancouver's got as good of a chance as anyone to actually win a final against a Mexican squad. I really do think that they're capable. That is a damn good team.
And just as a reminder, when is the final? Do you know off the top?
Yep. Final is June 1st. Yep. Yep. We have a busy weekend. Right? Yep. One legged. It was based on, so they formatted it and where they were kind of keeping track of points and almost like this, like kind of group table where it was over, like based on if you were winning like legs of, and giving you 3 points for those, and then goal differential was applied. So there was a way that they formatted who was going to host. Vancouver would have hosted, I think, if that Cruz Azul game ended in a tie and then away goals was going to be the result, then they would have hosted. But any other result, I think they fell behind on points. So that's why they're going to be on the road traveling to it. And that's how they decided. So, yeah, but that weekend is going to be killer. I think it was, you have, the 31st is going to be that LAFC versus Club America playing game on the 31st. So that's I think that's Saturday. And then Sunday is going to be the Champions League final on the 1st. And then if I remember, I feel like I talked with my brother. I feel like there's another thing that's happening that weekend too that's soccer related.
Is that a one-legged playing game as well?
Yep. Wow. They're calling it the $10 million game. That's the floor of what everyone's making for making that Club World Cup. So $10 million game. It's going straight to ownership.
Let's go LAFC.
They got to give the players a little bonus for winning that game. That'd be crazy.
It really would. It'd be so good to have an extra MLS team in there too. But I would assume FIFA's probably kind of, fingers crossed, that Club America makes it, because that's such a big-time money maker. If they're in the tournament, that is huge. Yeah.
Wherever they go, they're just going to get pack those tickets.
Absolutely.
All right. Vancouver, awesome team. And we're going to kind of stick with them a little bit. Obviously, I think we know what we're going to grade them in this section, but we're going to do contender or pretender for the top four teams in both the East and West. Let's start with the Western Conference since we're already here, and I'm going to go to picks and biz for each team. They're going to go contender or pretender, maybe a few opinions on the team, nothing too crazy, as this is just, you know, a middle section of the show, but I'm curious, definitely know what biz is going to say on number two, but... Vancouver Whitecaps, guys, I think we can do this one quickly. It's been said. Both contender. Favorites? Can you upgrade it?
Yeah, right now I would. Okay. That's my favorite to win the whole thing, I think, right now with what I've seen. Pending injuries and...
I mean, they just beat Miami. They just proved it over two legs that they could beat Miami. Which
badly.
Is favorite, so.
They just beat them, too. They killed them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was something.
All right, let's get to two. Let's get it over with. Biz, Minnesota United, contender or contender?
Definitely, I think contender. We'll apply this. This is kind of like the staying in that top four range is what I would say probably applies to that. So saying that you're going to like host a home playoff game, it doesn't mean that. And I think because that's just implying that you're thinking that it, in reality, that team's got a chance in MLS Cup, right? I would say for me, in using that criteria, I definitely do think that, with how we've played this year and what we've looked like, I think that applies to us. We just 3-0'd Austin FC over the weekend in a game that we were without a couple pieces. So it was nice to see that on the road, a good bounce back game after getting absolutely smoked by that Vancouver squad.
Defenses in the league too. Very impressive.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I think that's a really encouraging win on the road, especially, I mean, you needed that one too. Cause like I said on the last pod, we were going into a really tough stretch with Vancouver. Yeah. Vancouver, Austin. Now we have Miami this weekend. From the sounds of it, we'll get into this a little bit later, but sounds like that might be a full team now too. I think Miami getting bounced from the Champions League probably was good for the messy playing fortunes for us this weekend. but yeah, tough schedule, man. I mean, we dropped some points in some spots that I think we probably shouldn't have. So you kind of you do that to yourself where you kind of make it a little bit harder on yourself in those spots. But that's you got to win games like that. Then when you're doing that, you need to go and pull points against a team that is struggling to manufacture offense in Austin FC, which is a whole another discussion for another time with that front line and how they're struggling. But yeah, 19 points through 11 games. If you would have told me that prior to the season started, I 100% take that and would have felt pretty comfortable with it. I will say interesting discrepancy though, between this, the West and the East right now, and how much Vancouver's running away with it. Mm-hmm. If you plopped us down in the East right now, we'd be sitting in fifth place. So there's still work to be done. I think you'd still need to probably try to pull a couple wins in a row here if you can, and figure out how to get the ball rolling, start to try to slim that gap a little bit with Vancouver. But yeah, you already know I'm going contender. Not even a question.
Picks, are you going to break his heart?
No, I agree. I think that Minnesota do have it. But what they do need to do is they need to start scoring a few more goals. And they have to have a little bit more ice in the veins to be able to ice out the game. Because I feel like a lot of the times, those last 45 minutes is kind of where they might, you know, they're sitting on 19 points, Vancouver of 26. I think that Minnesota very easily could have had 22, 23 points if they had been able to ice out some of those games. So I think that one of the biggest discrepancies in the West among the top four is the fact that Minnesota is the only one who doesn't have 21 plus goals. So I think there is, you know, a discrepancy of there needs to be. The good thing is that Minnesota are solid defensively, so it doesn't impact that much. It doesn't impact them that much when they're at that top four comparing with the other teams in the West. But over time, you know, when we get more games in, I think that those 3 points are going to come to a lack of goals right now. So I think the earlier that gets discussed and the earlier that gets, you know, worked out, I think that the better Minnesota look, and I think that they're looking great right now. But if they really do want to challenge for the MLS Cup, I think that the goal scoring is kind of what needs to be buffed a little bit more.
Okay. Yeah, I don't disagree with that take.
Sticking with you, picks. Portland, contender, yeah, so pretender.
Portland is a very tricky one because their goal difference is horrible. They have a goal difference of 2. They have 19 goals scored on them, which is, you know, insane compared to everybody else, you know, around them. Everybody else has much higher goal difference. So one of the biggest things is that Portland's defense is just so lacking that I think that while they'll be probably top six, I think that in the MLS Cup, it's going to be very tough to be able to maintain that with how leaky their defense has. And one of the things is that they have two Colombians. They have Santiago Moreno and Juan Mosqueda. So it's like, you know, those are the people who are at fault in a sense. But it's because they're so attacking and they're basically playing two at the back because they have those two guys pushing up so high. So I think that, you know, that needs to be worked on to make themselves a little bit more solid defensively before, you know, trying to push out and attack more if they do want to be more contenders. But that's their defense is something that makes me really, you know, question them, especially because they do, when they let in a goal, they don't let in just one, they let in a few. So that's something that I think that needs to be worked on for them to really make that push. But I think that their attack going forward is good, that their just defense is a little bit too leaky for me to really want, you know, give them the pixel seal of approval.
You know, I think that's what they really want at the end of the day, that approval. So,
well, they signed so many Colombians, they might as well.
Exactly. Biz, what do you think?
Yeah, pretender for me. I've gotten to watch them a couple times now. They've actually impressed me. I'll preface this by saying they've impressed me more than I thought they were going to. I would have, like, ahead of the season, with what I know about Phil Neville and, like, what I watched with him at Inter Miami, I was not a huge fan. It's kind of a similar situation with like Ben Olsen at Houston over the last couple of years, where that's worked out against what I thought was possible with how he has them playing. But the one thing that Pixel hit the nail on the head with how I feel about it too. I've watched them, I think two full games now, and both times, like the defense is just, I mean, it's nowhere near the class of what their front front four is typically looking like, what their front, you know, sit. There's always that giant gap that seems to form too, like late in games with the transition, where it's like you feel like the attack's always trying to push forward and the defense is just gassed, because they're like, usually for a lot of the game, I feel like it's just one of those teams that's like up and down the field so much. And the big thing that I'll say, though, and give them credit, is the fact that like that team is capable of blowing anyone off the field any game. It doesn't matter, based on some of the talent that they've brought in. That DaCosta signing is 100% like nailed it. I was surprised too, with a player like Evander leaving, being able to bring in a player like that is instantly like plug and play capable designated player and filling the shoes of a player like that. I don't think he's the same player as Evander. They're like different styles of players, but quality wise, I think he fills the void. And for what I remember, they got him cheaper than what they even take. So they pocketed some cash, brought in a player that's going to be able to also on top of it, give them some production. And then also maybe you pocket a little bit of that money and spend that down the line to help that back line. So I think for now, with how it's constructed, I would definitely put Pretender. I do think that this team, though, is capable of making like a playoff spot outside of even the wild card. I think they could be like a 7 or a 6, like Pick said. But where I would probably put them in, I think long-term too, they're going to be helped a little bit because Maxime Crépeau just came back too, and he had not been playing for a fair portion of the season, and that's significant. That's the Canada like 1B right now with Dane St. Clair. They're kind of going back and forth on trading who's starting and who's not. But yeah, I think that will also help them maybe get a little bit of stability, because there's some players on that back line that I know, like Claudio Bravo, I know Kamal Miller, Mascuera. It's like there's players on that back line that I actually like. It's just for whatever reason, it's not working right now, and they need to figure out kind of how to iron it out. But yeah, 19 goals through 11 is, you know, that's just not. I'm honestly surprised they're on 18.
Like, because they can score so much. Yeah,
you know? It is. It's like they've been able to counteract it in games that they need to. So it's like you have that going for you. But it's like I just think in MLS that I think over time you kind of learn that style of play, unless you're running the Galaxy mantra last year where you're beating teams by a couple goals, like, and you know, you're maybe doubling that goal scoring output. Like, that's how you're going to have to be. It's like, you're going to have to, if you're going to lean into the Golden State Warriors model of a few years back, you're going to really need to lean into it. So I think they need to bring in some signings probably in the summer that are going to be able to help with that over time. But I'll be curious to see kind of how, I think they're going to probably start to trickle a little bit, but I think they'll stay afloat enough, but I think they'll start to trickle outside of that four for sure.
All right. Moving on to a Southern California team and another team that's kind of right behind them, another Southern California team, San Diego FC. Biz, I'm going to stick with you. Contender or pretender? You were really high on them at the start.
I am. Yeah, I am. And I still am. Here's the thing of why I'm going to say pretender for them as well. Solely for the fact that the teams that I see in the rearview mirror are the whole reason why. I think LAFC and Seattle are both coming for those spots.
Yeah,
I was high on them from the start of the year. I think LAFC right now is playing much better. I think now that they're out of Champions League and they don't have to, they were being done a disservice with how much they were having to rotate to try to deal with both fixtures with Giroud not providing much. Like, that's really been a massive hindrance to them. And I think like them also really kind of biding their time and waiting on what the answer is on this Antoine Griezmann stuff. Like, I feel like they just need to get a solid answer on that and move on and start to try to like actually make their team how they need to make it. It's like, I feel like they have this just giant spot that they've been just like kind of a reserved seat for them. And it's like one of those where it's like, it's not even 100% certain that he's shown up. So it's like, I feel like it's doing a disservice to like the long form, run of the team. And so you're starting to see the team though compiling some results together. I think they haven't lost in four now. Beat San Jose a few games back, drew with Portland, drew with St. Louis City, beat Houston. So it's like they're starting to like at least go the right direction here. They've shot, I think they were down in like the 10-9 spot last time we were live. So the fact that they're kind of like middle playoff spot now already, just with like a good like 2-week stretch there all of a sudden, I think that's big. And then Seattle would be the other team with how much they've been cooking lately too. They've won 3 out of their last 4. The one they didn't was a draw. So it's like, they're really starting to hit and stick too. Schmetzer's got like some of the young guys too coming up and playing minutes. Like we were referencing on your stream the other day, deal with Ozaze de Rosario from Tacoma Defiance, Dwayne de Rosario's son. coming in and getting some minutes. You're starting to see that with a lot of guys like Manungu, who's like the right winger, is playing pretty consistently now as a key piece. Like Rothrock, who's like this like utility guy that was like a Tacoma player for a while too, that was like kind of like just that fun story that like kind of made himself into this like really important role player for them all of a sudden. It's like you have these players that are starting to like really, I think, show their worth. And then on top of it, Pedro de la Vega is finally staying mm-hmm. healthy, which is also, he hasn't been, from what I can see, hasn't been like outstanding this year, but it's like, it's the threat of him being on the field that helps like kind of stretch the field for the rest. So those two teams are 100% why I'm dropping San Diego outside of it. It's nothing against San Diego. I do think I still am standing strong on San Diego being a top six team. I think they continue to defy even like kind of what I was expecting from them and really impressed me with like kind of a similar thing to Portland, like just really good attacking play. Anders Dreyer seems to be like one of the top signings of the season. That dude is a dog. And then Chucky Lozano kind of looked like his old self. Like, I feel like he's starting to get confident and he had a brace over the weekend. You're starting to see some things start to turn the right way for them too. They hit a little bit of a rough patch recently. They went through, they had three losses in a row prior to their win this weekend. So, yeah, kind of their first bumps in the road is from their MLS tenure, but yeah, definitely we'll put them pretender. I'm high on LAFC in Seattle.
Picks, what do you think about San Diego?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, you know, I said it last episode that I was pretty high on LAFC. I think that they do need that push that Biz was saying, and I think that they probably are going to be competing for that, you know, top four, top three spot over San Diego, because I think that the biggest thing about San Diego is that they're such a new team that their early momentum, I think, is a lot, you know, that can be attributed a lot to a team kind of getting a new manager in, where you get that new manager push, everybody's excited. But, you know, as you go a little bit down through the season, it's going to take a little bit more motivation to push you through. You don't get the same motivation of like, hey, there's a new manager, a new person to impress, new fans to impress. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how they adapt to being for the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. I do think that they are, like Biz is saying, that I think they're going to be competing for top six. But top four is just a little bit unlikely for me when you have teams like LAFC, especially with LAFC's story where, you know, this is the last season under that manager. Potentially under a lot of these same players. They might bring in some pieces, as Biz was saying, for the summer, depending on, you know, what happens with Giroud. And even some other players like De Bruyne is on the market. You know, there's been talks about Thomas Mueller's been talking about the MLS. Pogba's also out there, obviously linked to different amount of teams, but that's not to say that it can't happen elsewhere. I think that overall San Diego just need to have a little bit more consistency, and I don't think that that comes easily in the MLS. I think that consistency is one of the rarest things in the MLS, and I think that, you know, that makes Vancouver so good is that their consistency, and I think that San Diego's lack of consistency, just because they're a new team, is what's going to put them a little bit lower down the, you know, down the rankings, down the standings.
Yeah. I would say too, just to add, San Diego definitely like has given me a little bit of pause too, of like, normally I feel like now is the time where you kind of, the reason I even put this on the agenda is the fact that I feel like you start to kind of understand what a team's going to be at this point of the year, right? Like you start to understand, like, based on commonality of opponents, based on, you know, how, like, run of form, based on, you know, some individual player performances you're able to pick out. San Diego's a team for me though, where I've watched them a couple times and I've literally been like jaw on floor, like, holy hell. Like, even just this weekend, they beat Dallas 5-0 and just destroyed them. Like, and they've beaten Seattle 3-0. But then you look at like some of the other results and it's like lost to a Salt Lake team 3-1, lost to Charlotte 3-0, lost to Colorado 3-2. It's like you managed to lose to two teams right now outside of the West in the playoffs, and then an admittedly decent Charlotte team. But it's like you start to kind of like scratch your head a little bit with like some of that, like you said, picks, that inconsistency where you're, San Diego's probably amongst the couple teams in my list where I'm still not 100% sure like what the end product is going to be. I'm pretty confident, like I said, like there's enough quality in that team where I think they'll eventually figure that out and maybe hit it in stride a little more. And I'm still also kind of banking on that team is going to make another signing. I don't know what it is. Like, I don't know if it's going to be De Bruyne level, but they strike me with how they've built their roster as well. Smart and savvy enough to be able to find a piece that will plug in and fit within that system pretty quick as well. And I think it also is being calculated where they're going to have enough time to identify what that piece needs to be as well. It doesn't need to be you know, does it need to be a cam? Does it need to be a defensive midfielder? Does it need to be something, you know, that's I'm giving you width on the outside in some capacity of like a wing back or a wing, like striker? You'll figure it out. So I think long-term with that, that's where I would say I still have confidence in them in the long run. But yeah, they are a little bit of an enigma lately. I don't really know what to make of them with over these last few games.
Yeah. It's always interesting with the expansion teams. And I feel like lately in sports, especially, you know, major American sports, expansion teams have kind of started off hot. I remember with, you know, the biggest example being the Las Vegas Knights. That was just such a crazy one. But I don't know. It just feels like more often than not, these expansion teams have a lot more to give at the start. But I think Picks makes a really great point in terms of, like, they need to, like, this is a team of guys that are, you know, this is their first time playing together, and it's different when it's first starting to have it go for the entire season and to, you know, really make things happen. We will see, but at least in the MLS, you have a ton of opportunity to make the playoff. And, you know, in their first season, if they make the playoffs, that's an incredible opening season, no matter where they kind of land there. So that's the Western Conference. What I think I want to do before we head over to the Eastern Conference, because we were talking about little Minnesota at first, and we are going to be talking about one of those other teams soon, is Biz. You spoke about it early in the year, about maybe selling those messy tickets when the boys are coming down to Minnesota.
Oh, man.
Has your opinion changed? Are you and bro going to go watch him? Or what's the vibe?
Yeah, so the plan, I should specify too, the plan was always to go. I don't think that's – it was more going to be, were we going to – you're kind of playing with fire a little bit with like him showing up or not, because I think a lot of this stuff is like market value with these resale tickets is kind of a scary thing to play around with. We have seats for instances just like this that me and my brother we've had those since, you know, before this team was even in the MLS. We had heard that there was rumblings that we were potentially going to get a team way back when, bought tickets at Blaine, went to those games when we were back in the NASL and went and, you know, just playing in a little suburb to have the priority to be able to buy tickets for something if MLS ever got to this point for these types of instances. So it was really a proactive, like hopeful purchase on our part that's like panned out, and we're both really happy that we did it. But now certain instances like this, where with season tickets, you just get them at face value for what they are. And then SeatGeek's the main app, so you're just going on and listing them. And for a standard game, it's like, you know, you just list them. Don't think about it. They're usually out of your hands and somebody will take them for, you know, I don't know, 10, 20, 30 bucks over whatever your face value for the ticket is that day. And you'll walk away with some money in your pocket, which is a cool deal. But these messy things are a different animal, man. I mean, the resale for it, we did an episode on, like, you know, the messy market in Houston, apologizing for him not playing, you know, earlier in the season. Things like that are a really big instance based on what he's meant for the MLS, but also like what he does to these resale ticket values. And I've kind of taken a peek in periodically over time now. And it's stayed pretty linear up till this point. And now all of a sudden it's dipped a little bit this week, 'cause I think people are starting to get a little nervous that it's upcoming and they haven't sold their tickets, but it's a lack of knowledge of understanding. Like, it's all going to come down to the moment that it's announced that he's going to play, those things are going to just go up like that. And so they haven't announced it officially yet. I did just see that he was training today. There was a little bit of fear that he might have taken a knock over the weekend. Mm-hmm. I also thought it was going to be one of those where it's just like, I just don't feel like going to Minnesota. Like,
I'm just, he wants to see you, like, Biz. He's like, got to see you and brother Biz out there.
I know. That's what I'm saying. But so I did see, though, that he was training today, which is obviously for the long run of him actually playing this weekend. That's great news. That probably means that he is, but it's not a guarantee. It's not a full guarantee that that's 100% going to happen. We also have Miami is not in the Open Cup as well. He wouldn't have played regardless if they were, but you don't have to worry about that with like the goofy rotation things or anything like that either. Hold on 1 second. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah. No, yeah. You're good.
Okay. Perfect. All right. I bumped my mic, so I figured I messed up my volume. But so across the board with all of those factors in there, we don't want to like list our tickets for too low or too high, price ourselves out of it. And then like also the whole point of if we were thinking about doing it would be to make a profit. We both agreed to at a certain point that we would only do it if it hit like a certain threshold. Otherwise, we're both like very content with sitting in our seats and actually seeing and taking it in for what it is. But we both agreed, like, if it starts to get in like the like couple thousand range, like $1,000 a ticket, it's like, dude, like, supporter section's going for like a fifth of that. Like, let's just go buy a ticket in the supporter section, sell them, buy a ticket in the supporter section and pocket like $800. Like, why would you not do that? It's like, I'm still about the same distance away from the guy. You know what I mean? So that's kind of the conversation. That's the conversation we've had about like how we want to attack it. But no, we both are in the camp where it's like, that's an experience that you pay. That's why you pay for these seats, right? Where it's, you want to go to a game to see like the best of the best players in the MLS. It's what I was hoping for when I bought them. And I think like inevitably when something like this happens, you hope that you're there. I think the best one, we were just, me and my brother were talking about it this weekend, because like thinking about the operation of how we're going to do it. But we were talking about all the players that we've been able to see and like the ones that were surreal. And when Zlatan came to town, that was pretty bizarre. Like when you're, you know, 10 rows off the field and you're seeing him running around against your Minnesota United backline, like Brent Kelman, who's literally from Woodbury, Minnesota, covering the guy. And you're like, what world, what timeline am I on right now? This is so crazy that he's just complaining about the field after the game.
Sounds like Rooney. Like,
yeah. So yeah, my brother got to see Rooney when he was here. It's like, so you've gotten to see some of these things, but I mean, like, this is the pinnacle, man. This would be the, this would be the one. So yeah, I'll stay posted. You guys will get to hear. That will be a big thing if we get to go. Me and my brother are already kind of planning a, we're going to do a nice little bar crawl, I think, up to the game if it does end up happening. So stay tuned. We'll, I don't know, maybe I'll even document the day a little bit. We'll throw some stuff up for the channel. Cause I think
that's what day is that is.
That'll be Saturday. It's the 3:30 game. So it's the earlier one. So it'll be kind of, I mean, Miami's always the standalones. So
four hours later, the Galaxy and the Red Bulls face each other. I'm going to be on that one. Yeah.
It's a little pod, rivalry after that too. So
well, just know,
Baby's first win.
You can, you can beat the Galaxy without shooting the ball in the entire game.
It's,
just know
it's
that.
True.
Just
don't worry. The Red Bulls will try.
All right.
Take
well,
the KC strategy.
Dude, that was insanity. Let's move back to the Eastern Conference and let's get back into that contender pretender. Miami is going to be one of them. They're sitting in fourth, but we'll start at the top. Columbus Crew sitting at the top of the table, 24 points, 18 goals for, 10 against. Similar in terms of output of a team, you know, they're kind of in like that Minnesota United camp of like output, you know, goals to, you know, goals given. So Pix, I'm gonna let you start with this one. You know, you're our Eastern Conference resident. I don't know of the four teams how many the Red Bulls have played off the top, but Columbus Crew, contender, pretender. I mean, they're a perennial contender for a time now, so.
Yeah, I think the biggest question mark going into the season was, what does Columbus Crew look like without the big name of Cucho Hernandez, one of the MLS's biggest stars? And I think that they've been able to come back and really be able to do, you know, a lot. And I think that Nancy as a coach could just never be written out off.
Yeah.
And I think that what he brings, especially the MLS Cup, which is such a, I think that the tactics behind it matter so much, just like the mentality behind it matter. So I think that, you know, I think that you can never really count them out. And I think that they're always going to be battling for those top four positions. I think that, you know, obviously that there were those question marks in the beginning with what does it look like without Cucho, but they've been able to bring in a few pieces. I even saw that they signed someone from the Union. I think they signed Gazdag or something like that.
Gazdag.
Officially. Yep.
Earlier today. So they're just bringing in more pieces. And, you know, I've always been a big advocate of those MLS, you know, MLS players who are just bodies who can, you know, play at the MLS level. And I think that, you know, bringing in those pieces have been really good, but Columbus Crew specifically has been able to, you know, push that, you know, new, what does an MLS player mean? And I think some of the players in like Cucho Hernandez, even Christian Ramirez for a bit, I think that some of those players were able to really push that line of what does the MLS, what is the average MLS, you know, standard player look like. And I think Columbus Crew is continuing to question that. What about you, Biz? What do you think on that?
Yeah, I mean, the Crew are probably in the same bucket right now as what Vancouver is. They've just been in that bucket longer, where they just continue to just like defy what I think is possible for MLS teams and the quality of maintaining through, like, I think the Crew are really impressive based on having the same amount of pedigree and success with like Sans removing some of their key pieces, and it's happened a couple times now. It's like cycling out. I mean, Zellerion when the, like during their yeah. first run through, like Diego Rossi has come and gone and then come back, like Cucho Hernandez. Like you have like a lot of these big key cogs of the team that have like been brought in, pushed out, or just like shipped out, and then you still seem to figure out how to like how to generate these new pieces, and they're doing it through the academy, they're doing it through like you said, picks. Like the Gazdags was a trade with Philly where it was a designated player, like with the new cash transfer thing where it's like they're able to get a new deal done with him and bring him in and find like that to me kind of struck me as like maybe a little bit of a goofy fit, but like at the same time, like it was one of those things where I don't even question Wilfred Nancy anymore. Like yeah. it's like if that guy like pointed at a player and it's just like that guy needs to be on my team, I'd be like, okay, like I don't understand how that works, but you know infinitely more than me, so like I'm sure you'll figure it out. Like that's kind of how I feel about those situations with them. So it's like that team is like Pick says, that one's just like it's an automatic check mark until they prove otherwise that they're not capable. Because the scary thing about that team too is like the fact that they are able to still like bring in pieces in the summer as well, and mm-hmm. even bolster that more. Like that's like, I still don't even feel like they're operating on full power. They're just like, they're kind of just vibing in first place right now. I don't get how you do have that along with the really good defense and still like, you know, kind of like above average offense, but it's like all consisting of guys that have like just somehow compounded minutes over these like couple seasons as role players that are now taking and blossoming into bigger pieces, like exactly. Azeal Jackson, Jason Russell Rowe, like these guys that are just like suddenly contributing on the offensive side of the ball. It really is impressive. Like I never have questioned Wilfred Nancy over these last 2 years anymore, because it's just like I don't understand the purpose at this point on why you even would.
All right, another team right there with Columbus Crew in a tighter Eastern Conference compared to the Western Conference. I mean, all four of these teams that we're talking about are just separated by 3 points from fourth to first. Philadelphia Union, one of the biggest surprises of the season so far. Shout out our boy Benny. Biz, contender or pretender? 21-10 on the goal difference as well.
Yeah, Philly is definitely like, I would say another team in that kind of in that capacity as well of kind of what I just said with Columbus, but like maybe on a smaller sample size with obviously the new coach, the new staff. And they seem like, it's almost like you feel like they're kind of almost like playing against themselves with like some of the moves that they're doing. But it's like, it's one of those things again, where like Ernst Tanner, he just keeps doing stuff where you're just like, well, don't do that. That's going to make you guys worse. And then all of a sudden they crank out another couple wins in a row and you're like, oh, all right, well, I guess that makes sense. It's like they're doing this style of play where it's just like there's so much emphasis on like having fresh legs and work rate and like getting players forward and trying to like dictate the tempo of and style of play, and it's all being run by like just getting youth out there and some of these new signings and just like trotting them out, and don't have bad contracts on your roster no matter what. I don't even care if it's like even slightly over. It's like it's exactly what happened with Gazdag, where it was just like it wasn't necessarily a bad contract, but you're like, you thinking that this guy wants to maybe re-sign for something that is probably more than you want to pay him. It's like, all right, then we're going to trade him and get money for him. And it's like they did it. And you know, I remember hearing Benny's frustration of like, what are we doing? It's like I was the same way. I'm like, what? Yeah, that makes no sense to me. And why are you doing that to Columbus? Because now you've made the whole league even more pain because Columbus just got better. But you sit here and you look at what they've done again now too, and it's like, granted, they probably played a little bit of a weaker portion of their schedule, which I wouldn't have said with this Atlanta United thing, but that's again a whole nother conversation. But Atlanta United 3-0, DC United 3-0, Montreal 2-1. It's like they've managed to all of a sudden stack three more wins, and they just keep doing it. Four out of five with points, and the one loss was against NYCFC, where on the road against New York City, I just like, I'll never get upset with anybody losing that game, because playing on that baseball field is just like it's a crime against humanity. I watched the Loons play there a few weeks back, and the narrowness of that field, it just makes every team look terrible that plays there. It's so narrow that like they just suffocate you with their style of play, and it's so hard to try to like even like just progress the ball, dictate tempo. You just can't do it. So it's like, that's kind of you get a pass for that. But Philly, I would definitely, it's tough because we're sitting here too, like looking at a couple of the teams. I would say right now there are like the top six teams in the East. You could make an argument for all of those teams being a top four at the end of the year. Like, and I would not call you crazy. Nashville surpassed my expectations. I've been a big Charlotte fan, like kind of since the beginning of the year. I think they're kind of a trendy pick, but also with how they play, I think they're organized well. But I feel like they might have been a little inconsistent. So as of right now, with what I've seen, I'll give it to Philly. But they would probably be my four. Okay. If we're like actually trotting it out, they would probably be my four out of the bunch.
Okay. Picks? Thoughts on the Union?
I agree. I think that the biggest thing is that we really like, just like Philly fans, we have no idea what the Philly front organization is thinking for the summer. So it's like the fact that they've already lost like three, you know, not key players, but three players that could always, you know, fight to get into the starting lineup. Within, you know, today and then the transfer window, I think it just, it makes me raise some questions on what does the team look like, you know, are they going to bring in any pieces to help out those legs? Cause it's going to get tiring once you have those players who are playing and they're playing, you know, these 90 minutes and they're playing full force, super high, you know, really attacking, really pressing. And that's something that, you know, Philly has made Philly, be where they are, but it could also cost them when, you know, the players are super tired, when they're also having to play League's Cup. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see what they do in order to make up for those pieces that they've missed. And like Biz said, a lot of those pieces made me scratch my head. But every time that Philadelphia loses a piece, they just come back stronger. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how they fill in those pieces, what it looks like over the summer. And I think that while they don't need anything right now, I think that they will need in order to just, you know, have something to switch up so that, you know, you have a little bit of untired players. You have players who aren't, you know, playing every single week 90 minutes and going full force for all of them. So it's going to be really interesting. I do think that, like what Biz said, I think that you could replace Philly with a Charlotte, with a Nashville, but I think Philly have also done enough for themselves to be competing for those top four spaces. So it's going to be interesting to see, I think.
All right, I'll stick with you for the third one as well. FC in Cincinnati.
Yeah, Cincinnati, just like Columbus, is a team that you really can't count out. But, you know, looking at their record a little bit has been really challenging because they only have a goal difference of two. They've only scored 15 and they've let in 13. So the fact that they haven't been able to score that much is kind of concerning for being one of those top teams. You know, the seventh has 13 goals in NYCFC. So they haven't been able to score that much. So it makes me, you know, raise some questions on what if Denki gets injured? How do they look? Are they going to be able to produce as much? But the other thing is, you know, they need to be attacking and being able to produce so much more so that they can really be able to get those more points and be able to be consistent. But I think that they're overall going to be in the top four. They just need to start, you know, producing a little bit more attacking and not relying too much on Denki like they have been over, you know, this first one third, I would say.
Yeah, it's been mostly the Denki and the Vander show over at Cincinnati, it feels like. Biz, what do you think?
Yeah, I would say for me, I mean, that this was my preseason one in the East, when we come down to it. I'm still sticking to that. I think Cincinnati has one of the most complete rosters when it comes to like their starting 11, and that's why I put them up where they were. They also still, I don't feel like they've been at full capacity. They're still missing a couple of their key contributors that they've had, and a lot of those guys are starting to kind of get up to speed. I know Miazga was out for a good portion, so it's like that back line that is so sturdy with Miles Robinson, Miazga, Haglund. You have DeAndre Yedlin back there. It's like that's a real, and then Celentano is like a really quality, like younger American keeper. So it's like you have those as your back line, and then you just kind of have that, like that combo of Evander and Denki, like just kind of letting them cook and do their own thing up top, and then a lot of other key pieces. It's like every single player on Cincy, like you could point out, they're starting 11, and I feel like they're quality. Like Kubo's good, Anunga's good, good. Like you really can. So the thing that I saw that really interested me, though, that I think also kind of sheds light on the fact that I don't feel like this team has necessarily hit their ceiling yet, and still has some space to go. Evander has not assisted a Kevin Denki goal yet, which I think is also really interesting based on Denki having six of those and Evander being one of their key contributors. I think it also goes to the style of like Evander has been very much like kind of the like bomb forward. I'm running with the ball, get out of my way. And he's also, I mean, he has six goals as well. It's like they're tied for the team lead. So with how you watch them play there, you can tell the chemistry is not quite there yet, but the moment that clicks, like that is, I'm telling you, that is a scary, that Denki is 100% capable of scoring 20, 25 goals in MLS. Like he definitely is. He had a little bit of a slow stretch. I've watched it enough now. His off ball movement is unbelievable. The bicycle kick that he scored a couple weeks back was the filthiest thing I've seen. That Cincy team, man, is a damn good squad. I firmly plant my flag still in the fact that I think that team could still take the East, but top four for sure. I'm very confident with that, with where they're at right now.
All right, we'll round it off with a team, the only team of this top four who has only played 10 games. So keep in mind in terms of the rankings, Inter Miami, and sitting on 21 points, 20 goals, 11 against. Biz, I know you're obviously going to see them soon. What do you think, contender or pretender?
So, all right, I'm going to pose an interesting question. I think you'd be silly to not say contender, but I will throw an asterisk in with what I've seen from them at portions of this season. Mm. I am deeply concerned about their backline and some of the things that they have done over the course of just even from season to season. If you actually think about the players that have come in and out and what that roster has done. Even just for example, we just pulled in Julian Gressel as who was one of their key contributor, but was one of their players. Robert Taylor was a key contributor that was just shipped out based on, I think this whole messy kind of playing shadow GM to a degree with some of Messi's friends coming in is doing this team no favors in the long run with how their roster construction is set up. And you're starting to see it exemplified a little bit, I think, on their back line with how that is being constructed. I think some of it's been for the better, some of it's been for the worse. You're seeing perfect example is you're seeing Ustari over Drake Callender for goalkeeping. I actually think that's been better. I think Ustari's actually been okay for being in his late 30s. I actually feel like he's had kind of a decent veteran presence back there. Plays sweeper keeper, I think, which is what they want to do a little bit better than Callender did. Callender just since Messi's arrival has looked insanely nervous at all times. Feel like he's taken massive steps backwards and that pressure is just not what he's about. So I think things like that have been positive, but then if you look at the rest of the back line though, they've just kind of tried to throw a bunch of stuff against the wall of figuring out what South American would be willing to play here on this type of wage. That's not going to be a designated player or a TAM player because we can't afford it. And we want to get all these attacking pieces in here. And you can see how much they are suffering through that with some of the players they've tried to cycle out. I think the biggest things is having this Falcone come in, who I feel like has been very, very whatever on that right-hand side. Wygant has been really poor in my opinion. There's just a lot of pieces on that back line where it's when you see a team like Vancouver who just they turned them in transition into Swiss cheese. That team had no chance. And that's, I think, when you go again, when you're Miami and you're going into the MLS Cup again, trying to make a run, you're going to face that in the playoffs again. You're going to have a lot of decisions you're going to have to make. It's you're not going to be able to be bailed out by Messi and Suarez, who both look older by the day. Messi still looks like Messi, but it's Suarez does not look like Suarez of even last year, man. It's changing. So I will still I don't know. I kind of want to be bold and say pretender, but I will say that team is a contender just because I think you'd be silly not to. But Pix, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the same line of agreement with you in that sense. Since the beginning, since they hired Mascherano, I've been saying that Mascherano is a fraud. And it's just because I think what happens with him is just you can't just rely on Messi all the time. And that's what's happening. And this manager doesn't know, he's not equipped enough. He hasn't managed enough teams. He was only managing Argentina U23s. And then he got kicked out of that. They had to beg, or he left because he couldn't even qualify. And then they had to beg for him to come back. So it's this guy doesn't really have enough managing experience. Mascherano is a genius mind, seeing him play for Liverpool, seeing him play for Argentina. This guy knows soccer. This guy, just like Busquets, playing that position. But the fact that he can't translate it to a manager isn't necessarily, him being at fault. It's just that they gave him way too big of a role way too early. Mm. He couldn't even do it with the Argentine U23s. So it's just the fact
doesn't always translate to you, right?
And I think that the MLS is one of the leagues that's just so hard to be able to adapt to. because it's so different from anything that Mascherano has ever seen. You know what I mean? Like, Mascherano probably showed up to training and saw like them trading with each other. Like, what the fuck is this? Like, this is unlike anything I've ever seen. I think that it just, it was, it's all bad in that sense where it just like, when you can't roll, when Messi is bigger than Mascherano in a sense, when, you know, the coach is bigger or when the player is bigger than the coach, I think it adds so many elements where it's just like, you know, I don't really know Mascherano's direction in a sense. And it's just like what you're saying is like, what's the team going to look like in 5 years? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I don't even think that's the thing though. Like when you have this opportunity with Messi, teams are willing to throw that all out.
Definitely.
Because
this
probably won't ever happen. It feels a lot like, you know, to a lesser extent, but like kind of what the Lakers did with LeBron, you know, you have an opportunity to get this guy at this stage in his career, and it's a little bit different, right, just league wise but I think they're willing to just let that be fine, because when will they ever get a player like this again? You know, it'll it could be 40-50 years, you know, it might never happen again. So
interesting stuff
contender and pretender. It seems like the group is pretty high on a lot of the teams, and I feel like a lot of these teams deserve to be there. Obviously, we're still only a third into the season, so a lot left to go, a lot left to prove. And, you know, I think all these teams will be in the playoffs and be playing for something, and Abiz makes a great point. A contender, I think, is a team that has a first-round home, you know, leg to start it off. I think that's a good way of kind of really setting the tone of, you know, your intent in the playoffs. So we are running a little bit long, so we're going to go into the grab bag in just one moment, but just quick yes or no for both of you before I do that. Pogba rumors to DC United, picks, love it or hate it?
I love it. I think it would inject a lot to DC.
Ditto. I'm all about it. Give me Pogba to that whole scenario. I think that would be great.
Pogba to Benteke would be streets won't
forget. I love it. Yeah.
I'm taking the train to DC for that.
All right. Love to hear that. I also really like that. It would just be awesome to see him playing again. I love the guy. So let's get into the grab bag. We have a couple of things that we're probably going to talk about. First of them being the US Open Cup, but we'll see you in just 1 second. It's the grab
bag. Let me reach into that bag.
All right, we've reached into the bag, and we've only grabbed one thing, but it's a very important thing. It's really the heart and soul of U.S. soccer. I'm laying that down right now. It's football heritage here. Sorry, soccer heritage. Something about soccer heritage. The U.S. Open Cup and the MLS teams are finally getting involved. Biz finished up the Minnesota game right before, angrily texting, why are we not taking this seriously? We got 17 year olds out there. He doesn't trust the kids. So what are your guys' initial impressions? What are some of the things that you guys are liking about the US Open Cup so far? No upsets as of Tuesday night. Portland late suspicious pen. I would love to hear some thoughts on that. Who wrote that?
Yeah, that was me. That was me. So I was actually watching that. Biz is rooting for Portland, clearly. But yeah, Portland versus Tacoma was an interesting game. I think one of the biggest things about the MLS Cup or about the US Open Cup is the fact that it's super accessible, in that I could just have Paramount Plus and I can literally watch any game. So if you guys have Paramount Plus currently and you guys are interested in watching the Cup, it's very, very easy to watch. You know, I'm usually just watching it while I'm, you know, getting ready for bed. And as I was getting ready for bed, I saw that there was because there's no VAR or anything, there was a bit of a shirt pull at like near like the 88th minute, which gave a penalty for Portland. I'm always typically rooting for the USL squads just because I want, you know, those upsets. I think that everybody wants those. So it was just really disappointing to see Portland overcoming as a result of a penalty with, you know, a little bit of a shirt pull. But one of the things that I really like about, you know, this tournament is just seeing all the different stadiums that we see. I think that, you know, we were actually one of the teams that traveled the furthest from New Jersey all the way to Colorado, and seeing their stadium, seeing it packed, seeing, you know, USL on display is just something that's really cool to see. And even seeing it through, you know, all the other games that I've been watching, and especially with the accessibility that I have through Paramount, I've just been able to really experience, you know, grassroots soccer in a sense, especially because there's so many teams that are so many of the MLS teams are traveling to those stadiums. I think that being able to experience that is really nice.
Yeah, agreed.
Osaze de Rosario scored in that one, Biz. That's, and then I think that's kind of was the impetus of him getting called up, if I'm not mistaken. Or
so
got went back. I'm a little confused.
Yeah, yeah. It, he played over the weekend too. So this was, that, so Tacoma Defiance. So fun fact. So a little bit of a, it's like a rivalry adjacent game because that's the second team of Seattle, obviously sending an MLS Next Pro team. So they have the option to do that if they are not playing, because obviously, remember, we talked about it a couple pods back on how they had formatted the U.S. Open Cup versus the Leagues Cup. You'd only be in like the really goofy format of only two separate competitions if you're in Champions League as well, which applied to Seattle, this circumstance. So they're trying to help with fixture congestion. That's why not all MLS teams are playing an Open Cup this go around. It's only pretty much half. That's going to continue at least into, from the sounds of it, at least into next year, with how they have it set up. But so teams that do not, though, can choose to send their MLS Next Pro teams in their place, which is what Seattle did. So Tacoma Defiance ended up drawing Portland and pretty much had a impromptu Cascadia rivalry cup game, which was kind of fun. So the fact that would have been ultimate bragging rights if the second team for Seattle was able to knock off Portland. Portland got the late one, like you said, in the 94th minute. But that's a really cool that was kind of a really cool first game. You had a couple of extra time games, which were the ones that I was watching to start the day yesterday, Tuesday. DC United ended up winning 2-0 in extra time. The first goal by Jacob Morrell was disgusting. It was like a long, like 25-30 yard curler that just like drilled the back of the net. And then Charlotte, despite the scoreline, you wouldn't know it by looking at it, but 4-1, that also went to extra time. Ajuman scoring in that one, as well as Leal Abada. But yeah, they ended up scoring four goals after the 96th minute.
Yeah.
So wow. It was that one was something else. But those were the two that stuck out to me day one. But yeah, then day two today, it's been kind of MLS teams rolling outside of one team that was not able to get the job done with NYCFC, the first game of the day, losing on a 96 minute winner for Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh. So the Riverhounds move on to the next round.
That's pretty cool.
Yep, so nice little cup set to open things up. But I don't know, Pix, were you watching some other games? What was some of the ones that stood out to you from today?
Yeah, there were some ones that I was a little bit scared of. Like, for example, I think the New England one went into extra time, I think. And then Dallas and Alta were 1-1, so it was a little bit nervy there. Mm. And even Austin versus Locomotive were like, it was 2-0. So
two-zip, yep.
The Texas teams are struggling a little bit today, so I was keeping an eye out for them.
Yeah, Philly managed to get through on pens, literally 1-5-4 on pens against Indy 11, so knocked them out. New England didn't have to go to extra time. They got one like super, super late though. They got one 88th minute. So they were able to sneak out. And then the teams that took care of business, Orlando and Chicago destroyed. Mm-hmm. Orlando killed the Tampa Bay Rowdies 5-0. Chicago destroyed Detroit, who is no slouch. That's actually a pretty impressive. I saw Greg threw some, he threw some top players out there. Like Kuipers was playing, Bamba was playing. So Greg did not mess around in the Open Cup, which I appreciate. I find that for what Chicago's looked like in league, maybe a little bit of a boost to the egos was needed with how things have gone. And yeah, then more importantly, my side, like you said, Minnesota United got a win on the road against like what I think a lot of teams or a lot of people who watch USL regularly consider to be one of the like top 2-3 teams in USL championship in Louisville City. I mean, if you look at the stat line, I'm so happy we walked out of that game with a win. It was cool, really cool for us too. I mean, the lineup we said, obviously I was messaging you guys like while it was going on saying it did not look good in the first half. I was very frustrated with, I don't mind them rotating in cup games. I get it. We have Miami on like over the weekend, so I understand the thought process there, but I mean, you were really doing a disservice for some of the young guys with like the lack of creators that we had on the field, in my opinion. We're relying on like a very, very rotational piece in Samuel Shishoa, like trying to do anything. So I felt like that was not helping, but they ended up getting it done. It was your boy, Dil. Sangbin ended up getting a nice little through ball. It was the South Korean connection, our new center midfielder.
I know, I saw he was playing. I was like, let's go.
he's looked great in the two games too. Ouyun Jung, I think is how you say his name. He's been awesome. I saw him live and he played a little bit in that Vancouver game. And it was one of those things where he hadn't played much. And I was kind of like to myself, I mentioned it to my brother because he ended up watching the Wolves playoff game. He loves the Wolves. So that's his squad. But I told him, because I brought my dad to the game, and I said, like, only highlight from that absolute dumpster fire of a game was that Ouyun Jung actually looked like very capable and looked like he's ready to get minutes, which is a huge breath of fresh air because we do not have Hassani Dawson in the midfield anymore. We need another body in there badly. So that's been good, and it was cool to see that he played very well. But then on top of it, too, there's a couple of young guys that, like, impressed me. I thought like I said, Sang-bin and Jung were the standouts, but Darius Randle was the youngest player in Minnesota United history to ever take the field today, and he was the one that ended up scoring the game winner. And he had been kind of he'd been getting talked up a little bit for the Minnesota Twos. I'd heard his name a couple times, so it was cool to see him get on the, literally in his first start ever for the team, gets on the scoreboard. And then you have a couple other guys step up. I was also really impressed with our outside back here in Chandler too. I thought he looked pretty good in spots. So it's like seeing some of the youth guys step up. It's what the competition's all about. Where, yeah, I mean, you took on a really, I mean, I was really impressed with Louisville City. I thought they had a couple really good players on that team. And I mean, they've cranked out some real talent, like even to Europe over the course of a couple seasons. So it's definitely no slouch of a squad. So I was happy to escape and get out of that one and go to the round of 16, because I'm hoping that we start like really integrating more first teamers and trying to take it seriously. It's, I was saying to you guys, the Open Cup right now for a lot of these teams, being that the full field's not in it, it's like it is a free pass for a team that wants to take it seriously. Like you go to Champions League if you win this thing. Like you can get into that like final eight, it's like you only have to win a few games and you're in the final. You know what I mean? So it's like if you can get through this slog of these first couple when you first get integrated, it's like it's so beneficial to your team in the long run of what it can do for you going forward and playing some continental competitions. So I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that that's us.
All right. We will have to wait and see. A lot of this competition has been very enjoyable. I'm really curious. You know, I think we talked about it a little in the last episode, or I don't know if this was off pod, is the USL specific tournament as well. Yeah. I'm really excited to see that kick off. And it's cool that the Open Cup one is so regional. It's cool to see like the MLS team kind of play one of the closer teams to them. It feels like you just get all these like rivalry games, you know, in a round of the cup. So very, very fun. Fortunately for MLS fans, unfortunately for USL fans, only one of their teams moving through to the next round. But yeah, that is going to be the majority of this episode, guys. We are going to brainstorm, all three of us, on a way to kind of do the predictions a little bit differently. We want to kind of bring something fresh, something different to that section. So we are going to put a pause in those for now. But other than that, it's been a great episode. We talked some movies. We talked some MLS, contending and pretending. Biz is getting ready to go see Messi. Will he get a Messi jersey? Is that
signed
possible?
Messi jersey?
Will Luis Suarez? Would you wear Messi on your back?
I make no exceptions to the rule. Sorry.
Wow. Not happen. Wow. Okay. All right. Other than that, guys, any final words before we go? Biz, I'll let you.
No, not much. I guess we'll just say thanks for listening. I mean, the fact when you said episode 8, that just kind of like
struck weird.
Yeah, we're doing these bi-weekly, so it's like they're really stacking up. We're eating a lot of time's a weird thing, man.
I know, we've been doing this for 16 weeks already. That's kind of feels weird.
It's weird. It's super weird.
Picks, any final words to the people?
Yeah, I'm just, you know, excited to talk about some more MLS in the upcoming week, so stay tuned, join the Discord, and yeah.
All right.
I can't wait to see the Red Bulls beat the Galaxy
I was waiting for it.
this weekend, hopefully.
Well, you will not hear the end of it if you give us our first win.
I know. I know. I might need to quit the podcast if that happens.
Yeah, it will be a tough next episode.
That'll be a great intro. All right, guys. Other than that, thank you everyone who is listening. Make sure to follow the Twitch, the YouTube, join the Discord, best three places to kind of interact with us. We got the Twitter as well, but I think those are the main ones. Other than that, we'll see you in 2 weeks in the next episode. Be safe, and thank you as always. Peace.